Without a doubt, one of the best parts of summer in the San Joaquin Valley has to be fresh stone fruit from valley orchards. Ripe, juicy, and delicious, the valley's peaches, plums, apricots, and nectarines are the envy of the rest of the country. And perhaps no one has done more to boost the profile of our local peaches, and in such a poetic way, than our guest today, Delray organic farmer and writer David Mas Masumoto. He's a third-generation family farmer, a James Beard Award finalist, and this year was appointed by President Obama to the National Council on the Arts. He's also a member of the board of the James Irvine Foundation, which, in the interest of disclosure, is a supporter of this station. His 1995 book, Epitaph for a Peach, brought his work to a national audience and received a Julia Child Award. His most recent book, The Perfect Peach, combines both recipes and stories and truly reflects his family farm, as his wife Marcy and daughter Nikiko are co-authors. This lavishly illustrated book gives readers recipes for everything from prosciutto-wrapped peaches to peach galette. They all join us here today in our studio for Valley Edition. Mas, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be back.
And Marcy, thank you for joining us. And Nikiko, thanks so much for being here.
Love being here. Thank you.
Always a treat.
Mas, I'll start with you. The title of the book, The Perfect Peach, refers to so many different things. The first thing that came to my mind is there anything more perfect than a peach?
One of the challenges on our farm is that we always want to raise that perfect peach. It becomes a goal that we strive for every year. And it's a fun goal because this is a product of nature. So perfection isn't a static object. It involves sometimes the flavor, sometimes it's the juices. And this year, it involves recipes that Marcy and Nikiko had developed for this cookbook.
While I'm a big fan of peach pie and peach ice cream, for me, I've always thought it's been really hard to improve upon the flavor of the peach that's just picked ripe from the tree. Has that been a challenge in preparing this book to cook the recipes but avoid eating the peaches before they're actually in the recipe? That would be my challenge, I can tell you that.
There's a great division of labor that occurred in this cookbook. I don't cook well at all. So I handled the essays of the book where Marcy and Nikiko divided up the recipes, the 50 recipes that they came up with.
Part of the story of the perfect peach is in search of what is a perfect peach, and then how do you use that perfect peach in the kitchen? So it's kind of a combination of enjoying that peach that will burst with flavor in your mouth and juices dangle on your chin after the running down your cheeks. But the other part is, what can you do with them other than eating them out of hand?
I understand you're from the Midwest, dairy country. What was it like first having that first California, that first Masumoto peach?
Actually, my family roots are from the Midwest. I'm a California girl. I grew up in California, and we did have a peach tree in our backyard. Now, both my folks were from Wisconsin, and so they did the old-fashioned way of preserving and handling foods.
But it was never as good as when she married me.
So. Exactly. So when I met Mas and we first got married, it was my task. I felt my obligation to try to save every single peach out in the orchard. And I worked and I worked and I worked, and I realized there was an impossibility at hand, and that every peach couldn't be saved that fell from the tree. But I sure tried hard.
My mom, she canned so much. I mean, this was before I was born, but a couple years ago, I did a major cleaning out of our pantry, and I found peach preserves from before my time.
Everybody has that kind of mystery jar stuck in the back of the pantry, and you kind of think, what is this? But you sometimes hope that it gets better with age.
Nikiko, you're the fourth generation on your farm now.
Yes.
What's your earliest memory of your family's produce, these beautiful peaches?
I don't remember my first peach because I say that I probably had it in the womb. But two of my earliest memories about harvest, when I could identify numbers, I was given the job of stamping our peach boxes. So I must have been 4 years old. And so when we started packing every summer, I would get this purple ink and these really old, worn stamps that we'd used for generations. And my job was to stamp each box. And somehow at the end of the day, I would always end up with this pink and purple ink all over my hands.
You've brought some peaches here with you today. Moss, I want to ask you, every year is different. You mentioned that in the book. What has this year's harvest been like so far? We're at the beginning of the season, but some varieties are already out there and already almost done.
It's been an early year because we've had a very, if you remember, in April, it was very warm. It felt like summer. And we also, of course, had a very, very dry year. So those elements caused the ripening to mature. We're probably about a week ahead of last year, which meant it's like I lost the week of work sometime in the month of May. It just disappeared. So we're frantically sprinting right now. But because of the warmth, I think the quality is just amazingly juicy this year. And so I'm finding the quality very, very good. Some fruit, one variety, the fruit was a little small this year. So we're trying to understand the dynamics of how to work with small fruit in the marketplace. The marketplace tends to reward big ones, and we tend to have small ones. So we're trying to, again, redefine that notion of what is perfection. And a perfect peach isn't always the biggest one or the reddest one. It's the one that we think we have has flavor. And that's what we want to do and instill that sense of memory with people when they eat their peaches.
You've been farming in an organic method for decades now. Tell us about why you made that decision and how has that changed over the years as organic has become such a big buzzword. But it's really more than just that word in your philosophy and approach.
Yeah, I began farming organically for a couple reasons. One was when I first came back to the farm, I was trying to figure out how can you survive as a small farmer. And when we sold into the conventional marketplace, we were just such a small player that we were just overwhelmed. And everything was based on production. And we didn't have that big of a farm. We have an 80-acre farm, and 25 acres are in peaches and nectarines. So how could we compete? So one method, one thought, one approach was if we farmed organically, it would be a way for us to differentiate our product. The other one, of course, was I did my undergraduate work at Berkeley. So I ran away from the farm, kind of got radical, but then came back to the farm, too. When I came back, I think I did bring some ideas and attitudes. And one was definitely to look at the land that we worked in through the lens of the environment and the ecology. And organic farming, for me, fit what we wanted to do on the farm because it was all about promoting life. And that life would then overlap. So when I got married, we had children. That was all part of the life of the farm. And organic farming for me is all about sustaining and promoting life.
I'd like to throw in there that as wife and mother, as we were contemplating what directions we were going to go with the farm, we had a young child. We live on the farm. We live 20 yards from our vineyards and our orchards. And the requirements for conventional farming are that you post signs, you know, with the crossbones when you've applied pesticides. And I'm thinking, how can I tell my 18-month-old toddler to stay out of the front yard because there have been chemicals applied? So to me, it just made sense, especially living in the environment, living on the farm, that we care for that environment and care for all of the life on the farm.
That 18-month-old toddler has since grown up, and she's with us today. Talk about what it's been like to work, obviously, on the farm together as a family, and now on this book together as a family.
Yeah.
Where'd you start, Nikiko?
Yeah, I grew up working, and to be honest, I really didn't know how special it was until I left. It was when I, too, following my dad, went to UC Berkeley, and I took an environmental studies class that I was able to put our farm in a larger context, in a global context, in a political context, and really understand the importance and the radical choice to farm organically. And since then, since I have grown, and I can say I'm an adult now, and we worked on this book together, I really felt really lucky. I felt I got to emerge as a peer with my parents through collaborating on this book, and I felt that was a very special experience to work as equals.
It's really tricky to work on a family farm because you're living together and you're working together and you're making decisions that are also for the long term too. So you try to combine all these together and you quickly realize if this is going to work or not. And so far it's working, and I think it will continue to work too. It brings out and amplifies all the dynamics in a relationship for good and bad at the same time. And even working on this cookbook, it was very clear early on that I would have nothing to do with the recipes. And it was fascinating to watch Nikiko and Marcy develop recipes and work together as a mother and a daughter, and also as peers too.
It was a real pleasure to work with Nikiko, because of course she learned to cook with me from early on, and so, you know, I went from the teacher to the peer in a sense, and it was a joy to learn how the difference in styles that each of us had, what we brought to the kitchen, basically. And it's probably defined by our generation, by our age, by our era kind of enlightenment, and what influenced us more. So what I brought to the cookbook the majority of the time were the dessert recipes, the traditional, the pies, the cobblers, the crisps, as well as the section on most of the section on preserving food, because that was something that was really important to me. And I fear the loss of that skill to keep good fruit to enjoy year-round. And Nikiko brought a completely different perspective, a new, fresh California cuisine style of cooking, I believe.
Well, I didn't have the depth and wealth of knowledge that my mom had, so I had to really have a wild approach, at least wild for me. And so I did a lot of thinking and imagining the wildest combinations I could possibly come up with. And some of the results were things like peach gazpacho. That recipe, I literally went into our kitchen with a huge basket of vegetables and just locked myself in there until I came up with something. One of the recipes from that day didn't work, but the peach gazpacho, I love it. I think it did. So I think maybe in a way our age difference really was is a strength, because my newness meant I had to innovate.
If you just joined us today on Valley Edition, our guests are the Masumoto family, the authors of the new cookbook called The Perfect Peach. It's really more than just a cookbook, though. It has recipes and stories from the Masumoto family farm. Marcy Nikiko and David Mas Masumoto, they have a number of events coming up celebrating this book, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And we'll also hear some excerpts from those stories in just a moment. Before we get to that, though, I've noticed in the book, Moss, that there's many references to peaches in human terms, as if the peaches and the varieties are people. And I'm wondering, what is it about the peach and these peaches in particular that inspires that connection?
Well, I think one thing we forget that food is alive. I mean, especially peaches. It comes from something that's alive. It's not a commodity and it's not a product. So once you start thinking of it in that different frame, you develop a relationship with it. And especially as a farmer and a family farmer, we develop relationships with our peaches. We get to know how they grow, what weather they like, the dirt that they like, and we develop those kind of personal relationships, and that's exactly what we want. We want to personalize our produce because we commit our passion to it, and we hope that that passion is expressed through flavor and the juices and the nectar and the aroma of our peaches. So the idea of personifying it is to bring and put life back into food, and not only as a peach, but also Marcy and Nikiko with their recipes, they wanted to put that life back into a recipe. So that's why all the recipes have pretty extensive head notes, as they call it. And a head note is that beginning paragraph to a recipe. It tells the backstory. In a way, it's a very short story that has to capture all the meaning of the recipe in about maybe 70 words. It's actually, as a writer, I looked at that and I go, I would have a tough time writing a head note, because I'd want to start expanding it. Maybe it'd be like 4 pages of a head note before you got to the recipe. So it was a real challenge watching them and witnessing them as they wanted to put their own personality into that recipe and express it as this little literary gem of a short story to begin each recipe.
Nikiko, eating a peach is an amazing experience. Some would say a sensual experience. The flesh, the aroma, the juice from the peach. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that relationship between the human experience and the peach.
Yeah. When I think about eating a peach fresh off the tree, what's interesting is I think about my own individual body. But when I think about cooking, I think about a communal experience. And I think that the communal experience is actually always there, even if we're eating an individual peach by ourselves. But there's something so magical and something I believe that's so sacred about both farming and cooking, because we are preparing something that is going to enter someone else's body. It's going to nourish their body. I mean, it's a very intimate experience. And I just love, I show my love for people by cooking for them. And I show my love for the earth by farming. And it has given me so much as a young person, as a young farmer.
One of the elements too about working with food, and we work with it day and night. It's out in the fields, but yet it's in our house. It's on our tables. It's all about that human element. And you're absolutely right in framing it as part of this humanity that we live. And that humanity extends also to like how we want to hopefully treat our workers and what we do with the extra peaches that we have, because we donate them to a couple like Heinz Hospice gets a lot of our peaches just to give away, because it's part of that other gift economy that's part of the work that we do too. And it's all part of that almost sacredness that we have with our fruits.
If you just joined us today on Valley Public Radio, our guests are Moss Marcy and Nikiko Masumoto, the authors of the new book, The Perfect Peach. Stay with us in just a moment. We'll come back and hear some excerpts from those stories and talk more about the events that are coming up celebrating the publication of this new book, which is out this month by 10 Speed Press. That's all coming up in just a moment here on Valley Edition on Valley Public Radio. You're listening to Valley Edition on Valley Public Radio. My name is Joe Moore. Our guest today, the Masumoto family, the authors of the new book, The Perfect Peach, Recipes and Stories from the Masumoto Family Farm. Marcy, Nikiko, and David Moss Masumoto are our guests today on our program. And this book is out this month by 10 Speed Press. There's a number of events coming up to celebrate it. But before we get to talking about those events, I'd like to ask all three of you to read some passages, because this is more than just a traditional cookbook. There's some great stories, and anyone who's a fan of the three of you will definitely enjoy the prose in this book as well. Moss, let's start with you, and what selection do you have for us today?
I'm going to read a short passage from an essay called Sweat. And the reason why I wrote this and put it in the cookbook is I wanted people to know that when they're eating a wonderful peach, making a recipe with a peach, they understood the sweat and the work that's involved with it. So here's this section about sweat. I'm not sure you understand sweat. Out on the farm, I've tasted sweat, a salty, tangy flavor as it drips down my temples, beads on my upper lip, and slips across my cheeks. Farm work makes me sweat. It first appears on my chest, seeping through my pores, subtle and silent, unannounced, on bare skin. Sweat defines the character of our farm. I think of sweat as clean and honest. Sweat reminds me of limits. Summer work in 100-degree heat, hellishly hot. The work beats me. I take short breaths, saving energy, feeling my heart race, the veins and arteries pulsating. I want to quit. Not worth it. Sweating is cutting years off my life, a drip off my chin, my nose, draining life away. Sacrifice years for a peach harvest. The work beats me again and again. Start out young. After a few years of sweat, you suddenly discover you're old. I stagger home and collapse. My children see me. They worry. Something wrong, Dad? Are you okay? They ask. My eyes stay shut. I shake my head. This farm's gonna kill me. They stand silently. They know I'm telling the truth. Sweat and peaches.
David Moss Masumoto reading from his new book, The Perfect Peach, a piece titled Sweat. Moss, these peaches, they are really a part of you and a part of your family. What's it like seeing them go across the country to some of the finest restaurants in the world and right here at home, it's a little part of you, isn't it?
Exactly. And there's a sense of satisfaction, of contentment, of relief to be able to share what we do and hopefully find homes for all these peaches and all this fruit. And at the same time, make that connection and dissolve that division between rural and urban, city and country, and have that food be the thing that connective tissue between people, so that they understand that food doesn't just come from a grocery store. It comes from people working the land, and add that human element to the foods that we eat.
Marcy, you have a passage as well that you'd like to read. Tell us about this one.
Yes, I'd like to read an excerpt from the chapter called Preserving Peaches Starts Here. And I had mentioned earlier that food preservation is a passion of mine, so I'd like to share this with you. I fear the art of preserving food in the home kitchen is near extinction, and I am happy to share with you, my fellow peach lovers, what has become intuitive for me. The truth about preserving foods for me is that while nothing is better than a high-quality fresh product, good preserved foods are far better than poor-quality off-season, not-so-fresh products. Although consumers have allowed the food industry to do most of the work in this era, the quality of the products and the options have become extremely limited in the marketplace. For example, it can be difficult to find peach jam in our local supermarket, and commercial frozen peaches are beautiful but often lack deep flavor. So if you have access to great quality fresh peaches, I believe you're better off bringing home a lot of them and putting in a little time preserving them, canning, jamming, freezing, drying, to enjoy at a later date.
Again, Marcy Masumoto reading from the new book, The Perfect Peach. Marcy, I want to follow up on that topic of preserving peaches and the contrast between the off-season fruit. It seems that through technology and globalization and market research, we now have just about anything we want all the time. And there's something so special, so rare about something like, say, the Fay Alberta peach that's only in season for a week or two. Does it make us appreciate it more that these things are so rare and so special? And have we lost that to some extent? We've lost that rhythm, the seasonality?
Well, there's many parts to that. As we created this cookbook, of course, peaches are seasonal. And we had a certain length of time during which we needed to produce the cookbook, which did not always coincide with peach season. So Nikiko and I were obligated to use peaches that we could find, whether they're fresh or frozen, in our supermarkets to test our peaches. And I will say, as lovely as some of the off-season peaches look, they are not the peach that you and I would probably want to bite into. And I did end up probably throwing away 4 out of 5 of the peaches that I bought during the winter, simply because they could not hold up in the transportation and the length of time that they were on the shelf before they got to me, which is kind of my point, that when you have access to great peaches, they're perishable. They don't last forever. So, when you find a good thing, you take advantage of it and then do what you can to preserve them in whatever way you enjoy most, so that you can enjoy peach jam on toast during the winter, or like my in-laws for years had peaches every single morning of the year with their oatmeal, because Masa's mom knew how to preserve them and serve them in the appropriate quantity so that it lasted the full year. So, and I think that was part of their relationship that his parents had over the years.
Speaking of preservation, Moss, it's not just preserving peaches for the season. It's also preserving these varieties, some of which are becoming quite rare. Talk a little about that.
One of the challenges we faced was that I wanted great tasting peaches. The whole industry went through a metamorphosis where they began to grow peaches that looked good, were bigger, were redder, and had shelf life. Older varieties lacked those qualities, and they were suddenly gone. All of our varieties tend to have a lot of fuzz because that's part of that old tradition. When they bred away some of those things, I think they accidentally bred away flavor. So what we set out on a crusade was to keep these things, to keep this flavor, to keep this memory alive in people. And we're so very fortunate that the timing worked as the organic marketplace started to expand, as, you know, the local market, the idea of local mentalities, the culture of food started to expand. We were right there, and our peaches and our farm fit that.
One of the things that Nikiko and I tried to illustrate in the book is there's a section called the Peach Primer, and we purposefully included explanations to the peach lover, to the cook, to the reader, as to how do you select a peach? What is a good peach? What's the difference between a yellow flesh peach and a white flesh peach? How do you store them? How do you use them? How do you know when they're ripe? What, you know, do you want a really soft peach for a certain dish or a firmer peach? And so part of this book is also trying to educate our readers all about peaches that I think many people have lost. I mean, generations ago, when we had access to our aunt and uncle or our grandparents that lived on a farm, people had the understanding of the seasonality of food and the qualities of food. And today, I think many of our consumers don't have that opportunity. So we're trying to share that knowledge, that history, that experience through our book with our readers.
Nikiko, speaking of generations, you're the fourth generation on this family farm. You're the Generation Y representative here. Food culture has become such a big thing, a big trend beyond just the food world. It's become a part of popular culture, and younger people are exploring food in different ways. You have publications like Modern Farmer magazine that are out now and so many different things. Talk about what something like this, what your farm means, not just to you, but to your generation, and the idea of sustainable produce, organic produce, and putting something like flavor over size and color and all of the things that we traditionally have marketed at us in the supermarket. What does that mean to you as a member of your generation?
Yeah, I think that right now there's a resurgence, there's a revival going on in young people, with young people and young communities about food and farming. And you see a lot of young people wanting to resuscitate that connection directly with the land. And I'm really invigorated by that. At the same time, I think one of the goals of our book is to tell a whole story of farming, not just the romantic rock star farmer side of farming, but the real side of farming, the farming that involves questions about uncertainty. How can we do this? Questions about hard work, questions about how to live and work with family. And that's one of my hopes, is that within the young people movement and our renewed sense of attention to food, that we're not just cherry picking the privilege story, the story of the fine dining, but we're also really understanding the policy implications, the implications for the environment and our own sustainability on the ground as people.
Nikiko, you have a selection you'd like to read as well. Tell us about this.
Yeah, I have prepared the head note to one of my recipes. It's the head note for Peach Day Pickles. And when my mom and I designed the recipes, we really wanted to take advantage of the head notes as a space to tell the backstory of the recipes and to really give a larger context for our work. So this particular head note is about my relationship with our family legacy. Peach Day Pickles. In 2011, I took my first trip to Japan with my mom, dad, and brother. We visited relatives in the small village of Takamura in Kumamoto Prefecture, where one of my great-grandmothers was born and spent her childhood. Driving from the train station to the family farmhouse, I looked out the window to see a flat, sweeping basin of cultivated land under the protective gaze of distant mountains. I felt at home. The scene looked so familiar to the view of our farm in the Central Valley, bordered by the towering Sierra Nevada. Many years ago, as my oba-san, great-grandmother, worked on the same land that I work today, I wonder if she looked up at the Sierra and thought for a second that she too was home. But she lived and toiled in these fields when anti-Asian racism was legalized in the early 20th century by the California Alien Land Laws of 1913 and 1920 that prohibited Asian immigrants from owning land in the state. Asians were not wanted, not welcomed. And yet, here I am, a fourth-generation Japanese-American, and I call this place home. The roots of this recipe come from tsunomono, a lightly pickled Japanese cucumber salad I grew up eating. I wish I could share it with my oba-san. I wonder if her spirit is still in these fields, imagining that she is home.
Nikiko Masumoto reading from the book The Perfect Peach. It's out now on 10-Speed Press. Nikiko, you could have left the farm. You did leave the farm, but you didn't have to return, is my point. What made you make that decision? And you talked about having a greater appreciation for it after you left. Talk about that decision a little more, because your peers are off all over the world. You're back at home. And I gather you're happy with that decision.
Yes. It wasn't an easy decision to make, and it hasn't been easy. It's been full of challenge, but I really think that's where the richness comes from. I mean, as a young person growing up here, I really felt like the Central Valley was confining to me on lots of different levels. And in many ways, I really needed to leave. I needed to leave to grow up. I needed to leave to mature, to put our valley in a different perspective. And when I came back, I found right here at home the values and the life that I wanted to live. I wanted to live and still do a radical life. What I mean by radical is of or from the roots. I want to live rooted. I want to live in a place where my resilience is tested, not because it's easy to come back here, but because it's hard. And that's what draws me back here. I just would not be anywhere else. I champion people finding their own destiny, and I just feel really lucky that I found mine here.
It wasn't the piles of money that was waiting for you on the farm? I'm shocked.
I think it was mom and dad that she wanted to come back to.
Maybe mom. I don't know about all the hard work that she has to do, but okay.
As parents, what's it like having your daughter back and seeing this continue for the next generation?
I think it's absolutely fantastic. When she first told us that she was planning to come back, I was reserved about it. I wasn't sure that she really knew what she was talking about, and I was just certain that, you know, something would happen. She'd fall in love, and she'd want to follow, you know, her love of her life wherever they went, and that didn't happen. She stuck with it, and she was committed to coming back, learning. She came back after Berkeley for 2 years and then went away to grad school for 2 more years, but then she's been back now for 2 years. It's not this two-year rhythm, but she's here. She's rooted, and she's very committed, and it just makes me, as a parent, not only proud, but delighted to have her here, enriching not only our lives, but I think the entire valley.
It's actually amazing in that you raise a child, they become an adult, and then you develop a peer relationship with them. And then for us, with her coming back to the farm and us working side by side, you know, it's another book that's happening here.
Fascinating indeed, and a great, great family story, a great valley story. And it's all in this new book, The Perfect Peach, Recipes and Stories from the Masumoto Family Farm by Marcy Nikiko and David Masumoto. The book is available at masumoto.com, and I'm sure wherever fine books are sold, but you have a number of events coming up this week that showcase the book and also have an opportunity for folks to get to meet you, to get to hear some excerpts in person from the book, and also, I imagine, taste some of the peaches. Nikiko.
Yeah, we have designed a whole peach week trying to invite people out in various different formats. Tonight, I'm going to be at Fresno Brewing Company on the Fulton Mall in downtown at 7 p.m., and it's going to be a casual event. People can come and talk to me. We'll have some tastes of peaches there, and of course, the book available. And I'm just really looking forward to hearing what resonates with people, what is their perfect peach. And we also have some other events coming up. On Thursday, we are going to be giving the program at Respite by the River, a program of the San Joaquin River Parkway. And we'll be having a reading at 7 p.m. And everyone's invited. It's free, open to everyone to come earlier if you'd like with a picnic and lawn chair. And then at 7, we'll be showcasing more of the literary side of the book with a performance of all three of our voices. And then on Friday, for everybody who's been dying to taste our peaches, we are going to be having a meet and eat peach pickup at Dusty Buns Bistro. We love Dusty Buns. Our peaches will be on the menu, and we'll also be there. You can pre-order a flat of peaches that we will hand-pick and pack for you that week. And so that'll be on Friday.
And the books will be there that night, too.
Sounds very exciting, and of course, you can get all of that information and more online at masumoto.com. Before we go, I want to go around the table here and ask you your perfect peach or your favorite peach, your favorite variety. Nikiko, start with you.
Always my initial thought of a perfect peach is warm from the sun right off the tree. That's the best perfect peach for me. My favorite variety, that's like choosing my favorite parent. It's impossible. But I will say right now, this season, the Spring Lady, our early variety, really, really captured my heart. It was the best I think it's ever been.
Moss?
We have 48-year-old peach trees on our farm and about 3 acres of a variety called Suncrest. And it's the variety that I wrote about in Epitaph for a Peach. So it's always been my favorite. It's the trees that I planted alongside of my father. And whenever I go in that orchard, I could feel his spirit walking with me. And that emotion, I hope, resonates in the flavor of those peaches.
Marcy?
For me, the perfect peach is one that explodes with flavor when you bite into it. It has just the right balance of sweetness versus acidity, and you can cook with it. So my favorite variety would probably be the Alberta because it holds up very beautifully under heat, you know, in a pie, a cobbler, canning, whatever you're going to do with it, warm.
It's a delicious part of summer, and it wouldn't be complete without peaches and stone fruit from the Masumoto family farm. Joining us in our studio today, our guests have been Marcy, Nikiko, and David Moss Masumoto, authors of the new book, The Perfect Peach, Recipes and Stories from the Masumoto Family Farm. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're listening to Valley Edition on Valley Public Radio. We'll be back in just a moment.